Welcome to the Rethinking Revenue Podcast, where CEOs, revenue leaders, investors, and go-to-market experts share hard-fought lessons of success and failure as they've prepared their businesses to evolve beyond the status quo. Now, let's meet your co-hosts, Ed Porter and James Roris. Ed is a fractional chief revenue officer and founder of Blue Chip CRO. He helps CEOs fix revenue problems inside marketing, sales, and customer success teams. James is a CRO's secret weapon, creator of Wins Selling. He helps revenue leaders simplify sales success by developing cross-functional go-to-market teams and establishing certified sales pipelines. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone. This is Ed Porter, co-host of the Rethinking Revenue Podcast. This episode comes from a webinar that I did with Paula White, founder of Side B Consulting. Paula and I have known each other since 2015, have been friends and colleagues ever since. Paula helps clients develop their sales and leadership teams by focusing on their intrinsic behaviors, which aims to enhance proficiency in the softer skills that play a pivotal role in driving revenue. Paula leads this discussion on the four zones of listening so that sellers can fully engage in conversations in order to drive deeper, trustworthy relationships with prospects. Toward the end of the webinar, I align the four zones of listening to a standardized sales process. This will help sellers understand their listening zone and how each one influences our interactions with prospects. Make sure to take a look at the show notes on your podcast platform so you can get a chapter summary of the book Forward Impact that outlines these four zones of listening. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show.
There we go. Can everybody see my screen? Hand, fingers, thumbs up, Ed, for you.
Yep, perfect. Good.
So we did a little bit at the beginning here, but what I wanted to talk about was where we are today in today's digital world. In today's digital world, we have Facebook, we have Instagram, TikTok, Threads is coming out, all these AI generated information, ChatGPT, Jasper, all these things that are really supposed to be aligned to connect us, but are really driving us further and further apart in our ability to have meaningful conversations. And then what do we do as business owners and sales leaders? You know, how do we start addressing these short-term texts and Instagram and our minds? So, you know, what I look at is that as leaders and as salespeople, that are meetings are becoming more micro learnings and very infrequent, and we're not getting the information that we need to. As a matter of fact, in the world today, and this was an interesting piece of research I found, we only pay attention a mere 3 to 7 seconds before we start to wander and before or zone out. In the essence of sales, you need to either be on point with your sales, or your buyer is going to zone out, or you're zoning out on what they are expressing as what they need. So this 3 to 7 seconds I found is less than a goldfish. I don't know how they measured a goldfish attention span, but either way, this was the impact that honestly hurt us. I'm going to face you with a few hard facts here, right? What is the cost of ineffective communication today? Ed, you and I talked about this a little bit. We know what bad communication is, but what is the cost of it? $15,000 per employee, or $2.2 trillion, I've got to move my screen there, or $2 trillion in the US alone. $8.8 trillion worldwide is lost in disengaged and lost productivity. Wouldn't you want to capture some of that revenue back? And that is the $8.8 trillion in disengaged employees across the world. So $2 trillion here in the United States, $8.8 in ineffective communication, disengaged employees. But how can embracing our communication, our meaningful conversations, adapting to this new trend of instant communication, or even overcoming what we need? Here are some facts that I found on there. 69% of business buyers expect a personalized interaction with their sales representative. 25% say being able to listen is shown to increase your productivity and collaboration, not only with your peers, but with your buyers, up to 25%. All the studies are down here in the corner if you want to highlight those. Those will be on the recording as well. 54% of your top performing sales reps spend more time listening compared to their peers. 8% of sales performance can be improved just through listening education. And so that's really at the heart of what I'm doing here. Would you all agree with some of these stats, or are you seeing something different than I am? Go ahead and put that in the chat.
I'll kind of chime in here real quick. The 54%, when I'm fortunate to be part of a lot of teams and work with a lot of sales teams, and there is a hard line distinction between the top performing reps and everybody else. Column A players, I don't really agree with that rating, but I think the top performing reps, when you look at consistency, there's a method that starts to resonate. And one is how they conduct conversations. So I think this is part of it. When it's listening, we've all kind of heard the art of asking questions, how you ask questions, but how those top performing sellers engage in conversation separates the best from the average. So I think that stat really hits home in a lot of cases, and I think could even be applied in a greater degree. So that's kind of the call out I wanted to mention there. Nick chatted here, two ears, one mouth for a reason. I'm sure we've all kind of heard that.
So interestingly enough, we have education on all those word choices on how to ask the right questions, how to the sales process, what we need to do. But we have not had a lot of education on really what communication and listening is about. So this was really my passion when I left corporate America, was this, what I have built a framework around is called true communication. And this true communication is really about building trust, respect, understanding with peers, buyers, or anyone that you're sharing a day with will lead to execution. If we bring some humanity back into our conversations to hold these meaningful conversations, then what we're doing is we're really providing that true communication, trust, respect, understanding, and execution. Now, trust, this is the first part of a three-part series, is all about listening. That is how we build trust. Respect is all about our words, our word choices, our conversations over text, all of those word choices. Understanding is understanding our music, our communication style. So I've got 10 archetypes that I work with that I do on communication style. And all of that all of this framework really led to how we really communicate as a whole. So trust, respect, understanding, and execution. This is my favorite part. This is really where we dive in to the four zones of listening. And what I want to share with you here is, you know, the red car theory. When you hear something or you're ready to go buy a car, there's no red cars out on the road. You finally get one and that's all you see. It's because you have consciously now been aware of this red car or whatever color car. And this red car theory is really what I'm talking about today. So your red car theory today is that we listen to people the way we listen to music. Think about that for a second. A 3-minute song can go forever or it can go really quick, depending what you're listening, what mood, emotional state you're in. And listening is emotional. When you're watching a movie, listen for the background music that is going to drive intensity or, you know, suspense or, you know, a calm summer day. On those kind of, you know, a lovely dinner out, you know, just listen to the movie's music in the background. If you watched a movie without music, I guarantee you that it would not present to you the same way that you are listening and getting information from that movie. Different types of music can also influence your activity. You can either be happy, sad, engaged, disengaged. And we do that with different types of people when we come into our listening blockers. So let's move on and get into the zones. What do you think? Are we ready for that? So, Ed, we talked a little bit about bad communication. Tell me what you think good listening is. We've heard hearing versus listening. People have talked about that. But when we talk about listening, what do you think good listening starts with?
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Say it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
What
zone was I in? And this is, I think this is a great discussion for everybody here. You know, I think we've all been in conversations where we zone out. And I know I have. And I find myself thinking about other things and saying, this person just keeps going on. And I know people have said the same thing about me as well. So I'll kind of open it up to everybody here. Is what does that look like when you think good listening? How do you assess somebody? Subjectively, how do you assess somebody on whether or not they're listening well? Yes, John.
First thing that came to mind for assessing whether someone's listening well has got to be eye contact. I feel like there's a lot of different body language that you can make when you're listening to someone to display to them that you're listening, whether that be kind of nodding your head or kind of acknowledging things that they're saying with an aha or yes or things of that nature.
That is so good. True, John. I agree with you. And there's also that, you know, that the idea of listening too. Are you listening for feelings? Are you listening for tactical? You know, what are you listening for? So it's a very interesting conversation there. Not only just eye contact and body language, but different word choices that people use.
I'd also say if they ask good questions.
Then they're a very curious listener, right? They're very curious in their communication style. That's great. So let's dive in. The four zones of listening. So we have the background zone, reflective, active, and unexpected. Now, the practice is understanding that the four zones of listening is based on your connection to people and the intention you have on listening. So if you think of your connection and intention, that is where you can flow in and out of these zones. Today, what I'm finding is people are really prioritizing meaningful conversations. But how do we have those without understanding how we're listening to the people we're having those conversations with, right? So let's go with the background real quick. It's personally focused. Deep focus, reflective is problem solving and helping and understanding. Active is really, you've heard mostly about the active role of listening. And I keep that in there because it is so well known that it is really about understanding your role in the conversation. An unexpected zone is about really creating, innovating, and uncovering. So if we think of unexpected as uncovering in the sales process, that is the zone that we want to be with. Now, what I want you to understand, there is good and bad in each one of these zones, but you need to be able to move fluidly through them to get the most out of your conversations. Not everything is background is bad, unexpected is good. No, sometimes background is where we need to be. So those are the things, and we're going to get into each one of these specifically. So let's go to the background zone. Now, I did say that it's how we listen to music. So I want to share with you what I proposed and how I got this is when we're in an elevator, we have the music in the background. We're really not paying attention to the music itself. We're more focused on what's happening around us, maybe a conversation, but it is there generating, you're hearing things. Like when you walk outside and hear the birds chirping, you may not hear them, but the birds are chirping. There's nothing that is too complex about this one, except that your listening blockers are on. And the listening blockers within this one are deep focus. And you are in such a deep focus that you are not paying attention. You are zoning out. And I have to tell you, this one came to me because of my son. I was working and he came into the office And he was sharing with me, because he doesn't come home that often, and he was sharing a story with me. And I said, "That's nice." And he goes, "You're not listening." And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Every time you're not listening, you have a canned response." We all do. And mine was, "That's nice." So think about it for a minute. What is your canned response when you are such in deep focus and somebody is talking to you that you want to just acknowledge them, but you haven't heard a word they said? Can anyone think of a canned response that they would have?
That's interesting.
That's interesting.
That's yours.
That's mine.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I'm gonna pay attention to that next week when you're talking, and then I'm gonna call you out on it.
That's right. Looks like Nick's wife calls him out on it all the time. What is your canned response, Nick?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to ask her.
So she's the better poker player. She knows your tells. You don't.
She does. Yeah, and it's funny because it's often when I have my phone in my hand and I'm scrolling through emails or Slack, and she's home for lunch and she's telling me something, and she's like, "Dude, come on, pay attention." So,
yeah, you only get a few minutes, right?
I know.
So, you know, Ed's going to share with you in just a little bit how this can go into your sales process. But the important part to know in the background is that you are in deep focus. You are focused on something else, and there's good about that. You have things that you need to do and get done, but just acknowledge that you are in the background zone. And so when people come in, you need to either say, "I need a few minutes," or "Give me 10 minutes, or you're going to have your canned response. "That's nice." So right. The next one, reflect. And I want everyone here to go back in time with me for just a minute. And this is really where we go into problem solving. But go back in time with me. Do you have a certain song that sticks out that you remember from high school, college, even a vacation, that when you hear it, it takes you right back into that moment?
John says too many.
Too many, exactly.
Too many songs.
There are too many songs. And when you think about this in a conversation piece, that is where we get emotionally charged with someone. They come in with a problem, or they come in with something that you've been through. You immediately go back into that point in time that you've either experienced it or resolved it. And so you're not really listening to them. You automatically go into problem solving. You automatically go into, "Hey, I've been there, done that." And you start taking over the conversation. And I don't mean you in personal. I mean we as humanity, we as human beings. It is very natural that if we've been there, we've done that, we get either excited to help, or we get to a point where, "Hey, I know this. Let's work on this together so you don't go through everything that I went through," right? And we've got to be very, very cautious with that, because our listening blockers in this zone are immediate help or daydreaming. We start daydreaming and zoning out of the conversation. Whereas if we know that we're in this zone, that we've been there, we've done that, we can actually really jump to the unexpected zone and help that person really problem solve, brainstorm, get creative, get innovative on their solution. Because you know, as I know, in sales, there's not one solution that is perfect for every single situation. So I'm gonna say, don't get caught up in that been there, done that. Have you ever been with a buyer that they're explaining to you their problem, but you, all of a sudden, you know, in the back of your head, "Hey, I've had 15 buyers like this. I know exactly what they want." You may know what they want, but you may not know how to get them there. So this is where we need to be cautious of the been there, done that. Am I holding ground with everybody right now, Nick?
Yeah, so I fall into this. I'm learning. Thank you that I'm not a great listener, because I'm falling into the trap of both zones so far. But we sell a really killer product that I believe in, like, so much, right? And when folks are asking about it, it's really a challenge for me not to want to show that off and be like, this is how you can fix it, and to slow down. So I think it's even challenging if that's the case, right? If you really stand behind what you're selling, which I'm sure we all do, and I get the benefit that I use it myself every day. So I'm also, you know, I have that firsthand experience, and so this is a good one, good reflection here.
Once we get these and be able to put them in, you will not forget them. And that's what I love about this red car theory, is this is new. This is something unexpected. And it's just a framework to really build upon how we as a community can listen better to our buyers and to ourselves. I remember doing an exercise, Ed, we did this with your group, where we were in-house and we did some Legos. And one person had a Lego that was already built. The other person had all the pieces and they had to go back to back. And they had to describe how to build this Lego piece without using colors, shapes, or numbers to the person in back. Well, the person, one of the ladies in the back, she's like, I automatically started assuming and putting the pieces together without listening. She could envision it, and then she sat in this reflect. She had these pieces and she saw the work and she saw everything that could be done with this. But as soon as he just did one or two pieces, she started building the whole thing. So she didn't wait at that point, and it really hit home with her too. So that was a good call out, Nick. Thank you so much.
And that's, I'll add to that too, because this is, I've said this a couple times over the years, is there's a term that I'm kind of coining right now, word vomit from salespeople. And what that means is we're ready to pounce. We hear something, we cling to it. We the listening blocker comes in and it's like, all right, I'm ready. As soon as you're done talking, I'm going to go in for the kill because I know what you said. And then once that happens, bleh, it all comes out, and it comes out in the worst way, never the way you want and envision. But what's happened is that listening blocker comes in, and that's preventing you from really listening. And instead, as Paula said, is you're really associating that to what you think you know about a common buyer persona or common buyer problems. And you've got that light bulb moment, and you've, that prospect or that customer has said something that you're just ready to pounce on. And that's a great example of trying to get into this hold back. How do you hold back, but take notes and properly move forward? So again, good realization, Nick, and yep. It happens to all of us. I've been there plenty of times. I'm sure we all can count. So, but it starts with awareness,
And, you know, it's not just with buyers. If we've got any CEOs or leaders on here, you know, it's also with your employees. So, you know, we're specifically targeting sales right now, but, you know, as we talk about this, this can move to your employees. It can also affect the way your customer service team is speaking to your customers, right? So it's a very interesting way to go here. And of the listening blockers I'm sharing, I'm only sharing a fraction of the 12 listening blockers that we have for each one of these. Let's get to active. This is the one that is most known. Excuse me a moment. I got a little frog in my throat there. This is the one that is most known to most people. We talk about active listening all the time. And I kind of think of this as a specific playlist. And Vincent, this would be your KISS playlist. You love your KISS group and you have a playlist that goes all the way down. So we're actively listening to that. But our internal listening blockers in active listening that we need to be ready to understand is that we also have internal biases. We have opinions to protect, ideas to share. So when we have those blockers in front of us, we're not really listening in a present state. We're trying to understand, okay, this is what they said. How can I protect that? I'm listening to this person, but they don't really know what they're talking about. I want to help them here, but they're not understanding me. Those are all the conversations that go along in your head as you are asking questions and as you are being attentive. And you're really watching for those body language, the eye contact, all of those things. Active listening is so important. And that is why it is very good with intention and connection built on that. But there's one step further that we can go. We also, in the active listening, want to become a fixer. So understanding your role, am I to fix or am I to listen? Understanding your role in this zone is so important because that is where our blockers will definitely help us know what our role is in this.
So real quick, we got a question from Nick. No, go ahead, Nick. Nick asked, curious what external signs we can look for that may indicate how a person is perceiving what listening zone we're in.
Interestingly enough, they're not going to perceive what listening zone that you're in, except by your actions, right? You've been there, done that, you want to fix it, or you're in this fix it in the active zone. So they're not necessarily going to perceive how you're listening. I'm so sorry. How you are listening. And that's the difficult part because you cannot perceive how they are listening, except with the cues of body language, canned responses, or eye contact, or if they're just, you can see it in their eyes, whether they're focused or not. So that's a very difficult question because when I worked on this with, and I did work on this with a neuroscientist and a psychologist and a musician, by the way, we really got into how we were working on coming up with all of these zones. It really is not about how the other person is perceiving, but what is going on within you. How you listen to music is how you listen to people. So it is your intention of listening and connection that is going to build their intention of listening and connection. Does that make sense, Nick?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if you said it or Ed, but you mentioned taking notes and it just drew me back to like, when I'm ordering at a restaurant and if the waiter isn't writing down my order, it agitates me. Maybe that's my experience that something's going to get forgotten, but I don't feel like they're really listening if they're not writing down all the things. And I try to order pretty basic stuff, I guess, but if there are certain adjustments or whatever, and they're not writing it down, I'm like, are you even listening to me is what it feels like. And that feels like a blocker to them getting a big juicy tip. You know what I mean?
It does. And again, that's where their perception, you know, is. And are they listening? Are they really listening and picking up on cues from you? Or are they in this active listening and, you know, or reflective listening? Yeah, we've had so many people order this way, so I'm good with it, right? This is where the good and bad of these zones can come into play.
Vincent, go ahead. Were you the one I cut off when I was talking?
Yes, no worries. Nick would hate if I was serving him or working for him because I don't take notes. I may take some keywords, but when I'm listening, I'm listening, right? So I'm trying to comprehend and engage it. But like when you talked about active listening, so, you know, I know I mentioned real quick, I don't know if I mentioned I have six children, five daughters, ages 30 to 19. And I'm not a good listener for my children when they're just wanting to vent and have one listen and be supportive, right? Because I'm always into, well, here's what you do. Let's go, here's the plan, let's set a plan. Where do you want to go? Here's, you know, if you want to move somewhere in life, you have to have a goal, you have to have a plan to get there. Otherwise nothing changes, and right? And so I head down that path into let's fix the problem. Whatever it is, doesn't matter, you know, what the situation is. I'm always in problem solving or moving agendas forward. As I was listening to you talk about active listening, so my wife is feeling under the weather. We were interviewing someone for a podcast last night, and getting on camera and doing the podcast, and we're like, hey, you know, need to get ready for the podcast, you know, it's going. And you know, she's like, oh, you know, I'm not feeling well, and you know, she's kind of laying out the story to me, and I just kind of looked at her. I was like, show must go on, right? It's like being it's like being on TV, getting not being on TV, so let's go. Right. So I don't know if I I probably, in some areas, I'm a very good listener, right? And it's like certain window of listening. But in other areas, I probably don't engage listening very well at all. It's kind of what I was picking up from the conversation.
And that is all of us, Vincent. I will tell you, I do have a listening quiz that I'm going to be getting on my website shortly, but it's pretty eye-opening when it comes to business listening. And this is where you need to be, is that leads us right to the unexpected listening.
Oh, I was going to tell Nick too, you should do checks. I do that all. So vendors, especially with vendors, right? And because I tend to be very high, not detailed oriented, you know? And so I'll just do a check, right? Okay, so let's review real quick. What's happening? Just to, like, you know, make sure they
What did
caught.
I do? Let's do this real quick. What did I order for dinner?
Okay. Did you get my order? Yeah.
Exactly. Did you get my order? Can you repeat it back? All right. Well, here is where the unexpected listening is really where trust really, really builds in. Now, they all build up to this, but trust, creativity, innovation, brainstorming. This is when we are fully present in our conversation. Now, when I think about this in music, think of your favorite band or your favorite artist, and they come out with a new piece of music. How are you listening to that? Are you listening to every note? Are you listening to every instrument? Are you listening to every lyric? You're really focused in on the piece of music itself. Looking at different genres of music, something you've never heard before. When you haven't heard something before, you walk outside and you hear an odd sound, you automatically perk up and listen. There are no listening blockers in here. All listening blockers are gone. This is a very difficult listening zone to get into, but once you start to master it, it comes so easy. And it's really where the beautiful part of sales happens. Because this is where, when we are in the unexpected zone, it's my favorite one of all, we are so 100% engaged in having those meaningful conversations naturally. Everything becomes natural, and you're not second guessing what you're saying. You're not reflecting on what you've done. You're not biased about who you're listening to. You're not focused on something else. You are present and 100% engaged, and you pick up on so many different things within that, that this is where the magic happens in sales. So Ed, any questions on that? Because I'm turning it over to Ed here. I wasn't expecting an orange. No, we don't expect an orange in an apple. All right, Ed, I'm
cool.
Leaving.
All right. So yeah, what I want to do is, there's a lot of good conversation about each of these four zones. And I think we can start thinking about this, applying it to your own or our own sales processes. And the kind of the one high level debate is that, you know, sales processes aren't linear. And I would argue that they are, or they should be, because things should be moving forward. But that doesn't mean that things not moving forward is bad. So it is a lot about perception, but I do believe things should progress in advance. And a lot of these listening zones, there's two ways to think about this. One is to understand your own habits and to understand where you should be at what point. The other is to be able to identify that in other people. So as Nick brought up, you know, I would flip your question earlier around to say, maybe it's not as important about how others are perceiving you, but try to hone in on what listening zone the person you're talking to is in. Are they active? Is there questions being asked? Ed Ryder mentioned earlier about, this is how I assess good listening, is that people ask questions. So this is what we want to start to think about, is where we are in zones and where the person we're speaking to is living in the zone wise too. So what's on the screen here is a very basic, templated, traditional selling process. So there's nothing, probably nothing enlightening here, but I just wanted to put something generic. A lot of these are tailored to each of your selling processes, your customers, your industries, and that's fine. But ultimately, I wanted to start to lay out what something like this looks like. and what the goals of each kind of stage are and how we start moving from stage to stage, because there's components in each of these stages that are our trigger points that we want to start to understand. What kind of responses are we getting from a prospect that give us the cues to say, this makes sense. Now we're kind of getting deeper into certain conversations and we can move conversations on. So the idea behind this, each of these stages, at the very end of them in the last bullet is, if anyone's gone through Sandler training or have heard of Sandler training, they talk about upfront contracts. Other sales training methodologies call it verbal commits, whatever you want to call it. But the idea of these kind of upfront contracts are a great way to assess listening zones. This is the time where you can ask the person, hey, here's what we've done based on this. I think it makes sense to do this. What do you think? Yes. Okay. Now we're starting in this alignment discussion. And hey, on the next step, provided I give you everything you need and you got no more questions, do you think it makes sense to loop in your CFO or loop in another buyer and have an engaged conversation? Yes. Okay. So we're starting to build this yes momentum. And that's this is where this assessment of our listening zones can help us to, what questions do we want to ask that are those upfront contracts or those verbal commitments to move on? So each stage, we're inevitably gathering different pieces of information. In the introduction stage, we're really just getting to know each other, first couple conversations, starting to uncover basic needs. The one thing here in this stage that I like to say is, you know, people lie. Sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's unintentional, but you've been a buyer throughout your life. You're not exposing your hand to the seller every time. So you're keeping some things guarded. So this is very much, don't overthink what they're saying, don't underthink what they're saying, but we're just trying to scratch the surface on some things. And then we move into this qualifying. Now we're trying to see if it makes sense to continue going down the path. And behavioral-based questioning is a great way to do it. It's not the only way, but it's one way. And the beauty in behavioral-based questionings is it requires you to be in some of these zones to be able to extract what the person is saying so that you can then respond properly. So we talked about the whole word vomit thing. If we get to a point where the customer or the prospect says something that we just want to pounce on, we're gonna tear up this whole behavioral-based questioning, and we're just going to go into me, me, me. We're going to go into feature benefit. We're going to go into a case study of how we've solved this before, and we're now kind of voiding everything else that allows us to truly move forward in the best pragmatic way. So in the qualifying stage, the other things we're really trying to figure out is this pain versus problem distinction. And I separate these two. Sometimes they're used interchangeably, but I separate them very clearly, which is pain is something that people can live with. A problem is something they can't. It's like a toothache. You're either going to take a Tylenol or you're going to go to the urgent care, the dental urgent care. One of the two happens. If you're going to the dental urgent care, that means that pain is so bad that other things that you've done haven't worked, that I'm now in problem solve mode. And your buyer's in the same boat. Is when you uncover pain doesn't necessarily mean you can solve it. And if you do solve it, doesn't necessarily mean that they care. They may not be, it's something they can live with. It's more of a nice to have, but this is the distinction between pain versus problem. And that has to be clear, because in the problem side is asking these behavioral-based questions of, what have you done to solve this? What's worked in the past? What hasn't worked in the past? If you had a wand, what would you'd wave it? What would you wish for it to be done? Hindsight's 20/20. What do you wish you would have done differently that you haven't done? Getting those answers when we're in that zone, getting those answers is absolutely going to dictate what happens in the presenting stage. Presenting isn't about showing a product demo or showing a pitch deck or a catalog of things. That's not a presentation. It's part of the presentation, but the presentation should align to what information you got from before. The conversation that you had, relate that to the pain, relate that to the problem, relate that to the things that the customer wished they had done before but hadn't. This is where these listening zones get really critical into understanding how you build into the next step of this type of linear process. And the key in this presenting stage that often gets missed is this consequence impact. And what that means is, what's the if you're asking your buyer this question, what happens if you don't solve this problem? Is it jobs lost? Is it we have to reforecast or budget? Or, oh, well, I'll go with someone else. So what is the true consequence? If that consequence isn't big enough, then there's really no reason for a buyer to advance. The impact is the same thing. Is what's the impact of your solution? Is the impact just, I'm a better vendor and I can do a few more features that maybe your current vendor can? Again, we're kind of looking at, this is the difference between switching your internet bill. If your internet bill is $5 less a month, is that enough to get you to go somewhere new and try something different? And so maybe, maybe not, but $5 may be important to some, but maybe not to others. So how do you really understand this consequence versus impact? And the only way you can arrive there is if you're in this problem distinction and you can get to the, what they've already done, what's at risk and moving forward. Now we're moving on to an opportunity where we can become that trusted advisor. When we get into this zone of unexpected, what happens when we start to lower the defense mechanism, we start lowering the walls and we start getting into these real conversations. That's where negotiation happens. Now we're recapping problems. We're continuing deeper into the consequence impact. We're trying to understand what is a buying process, decision criteria, things look like. And then we're continuing to move on to closing stages. And ideally, if every stage is done properly with the right upfront contracts and the right uncovering of problem, solution, consequence, impact, these cycles should start reducing. The more you can have a discovery call and have it be the meatiest discovery call in the world, that's going to shrink a sales cycle because now you've given that buyer an incentive to have another conversation or to bring somebody else in the buying committee. So that's where each step is predicated on what happens before and where these zones, these are really playing into the game here. So before I move on, because the next slide is going to talk about how do we align each of these zones to the steps in the process. So before we move on, questions, comments, feedback here. All right, cool. We'll kind of wrap this up in the next few minutes, but I want to just bring this home. And as Paula said about each of these zones, is it's not that one zone is better or worse than the other. They all have their part. And more so, they all have a spot in the conversation. So a lot of this is when we kind of tend to listen, how do we tend to listen? And this is very, very common. This is certainly biased in many cases, but it's a starting point. So when we're in a selling process, assuming we agree on these stages, how are we listening? So in the introduction, yeah, we kind of want to go into problem solving mode a little bit because we want to make sure that we're talking about us and that we can solve a problem. And that tends to be how we start in an introduction. In the qualifying side, we're bringing in this active listening. We're trying to be tuned in. We're trying to listen and respond properly, but sometimes we don't. We tend to get into the background zone a lot more because we've heard the customer say something that we want to pounce on. So now that listening blocker comes up. So now we're getting into this background stage. And in the presenting stage two, it's not so much that we're active listening, which is a tendency, but the presentation tends to all to be about us. We're talking about my product, my service, my solution, me, feature benefit, you name it. We get very easily, we can get into this background zone when we're starting to talk about me and we're not giving the prospect or the customer an opportunity to engage with us, to assess their feedback, to ask certain questions. Again, to Ed's point earlier, this is how we understand good listening, is if the prospect's asking us, or the person we're talking to is asking us questions. This can often present it when we're trying to push our agenda in the presenting stage. Negotiation stage tends to be some common things. If you've ever redlined a contract, you kind of know what's happening. You kind of get into this, all right, we're going to let lawyers speak and figure this out. If we get into the point about price, hey, I'd really love to buy this right now, but if you could just work a little bit more on the pricing, you tend to have your objection handling ammo that you're going to ready to deploy. So that tends to kind of be a little bit scripted. You're not really listening and it's more, I got my info and I'm going to present it. Closing is you tend to just take a back seat and kind of let things go. I'm going to ask the question, are you ready to buy or you ready to sign or what? And then move on. So this is tendencies. The next is we kind of go into shifting it up a little bit. So how do we, the tendencies we have versus how we should listen, some changes in the stages, but ultimately it is about this unexpected zone. And the earlier that can happen, the better. As Paula mentioned, this is where trust is. And I'm sure anybody on this call who's been in sales has heard, trusted advisor. How do you become the trusted advisor? How do you differentiate yourself from being just a vendor into a trusted advisor? And this is where it starts. If you miss this unexpected zone in a first conversation, it can very easily derail you from the next stages, or you have to do extra work in those extra state or in those following stages. Qualifying, presenting, negotiating. Again, a lot of these things have the background, presenting and negotiating, you still need to summon that a little bit, but now we complement it and we got to pull back into unexpected. When we're talking about negotiating, this is the time we got to listen to what are the real objections? Is the real objection price? Is the real objection time? Is the real objection me as a company, as a vendor, a product solution? What is the real objection? And we're going to have to peel some onions back. We're going to peel those layers and get deeper into that, because we can get smoke screens a lot and we're trying to respond to things that aren't there. So all in all, this is really the kind of alignment of where, which of the zones we should be employing in each of the different stages. And the idea, the takeaway from this call is to simply be aware. It's not about right and wrong. It's awareness. And it's be aware of where you're at and how do you work on what's the next move. This is a game of chess. It's understanding what the next move is. How do you handle it? How do you get the right amount of information each time? So all in all, that's kind of where this map should be.
All right. I was going to say, so, you know, Ed and I really, really want to thank you. If you want to dive into this more, this was a very quick overview. There are lessons and practices and processes to move within these zones and to put them specifically into your sales process. There's where Ed and I can help you as well. But in the meantime, Ed, do you have a final thought?
The final thought is this whole listening thing is important, right? This is where listening is about them so that we can adapt how we communicate. So I think that's the big takeaway that I would say is listening is about the person you're talking to. And there's a quote I heard years ago. Couldn't tell you who said it, but I follow it. You're having a conversation and the goal is to be interested, not interesting. So the difference between the two is how do you understand curiosity and how do you engage in a conversation, and don't worry about being like the interesting thing or the new product, the new feature, but how do you work on being interested? And that helps in this communication style, especially as it relates to this unexpected listening zone.
And I also wanted to share with you, I was offered to be in this book with 10 other authors, and I am the first chapter in there, and I am going to give away the first chapter on the four listening zones. If you want to scan the QR code and put in four zones, you should be able to get the first chapter of what I wrote about it in that book. It is an Amazon bestseller, so we're excited about that. But we wanted to, at least Ed and I wanted to give you something just to kind of remind you of these zones and how we can move in and out of them. Thank you all. I appreciate your attentiveness and participation, and very excited that you were able to join us today.
Absolutely. And another reminder, this will be coming. We'll be sending you a copy of the recording, so you'll have all of this in your email tomorrow. And thank you all. Good to see some old friends and some new ones as well. So thank you for your time. And Paula, great job. Appreciate it.